So, I've been out of station for a few weeks, and as you know, I've been to Buddh Gaya for Karmapa 900 and the teachings of the Karmapa, and then I was participating in the conference of science, spirituality, and education with lots of great scientists and spiritual teachers and educationists, along with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So I was a bit busy and was not able to send answers to the questions. So now, today I'm going to answer some of the questions that I've received. And this first question is, I find it very difficult to relate to and feel compassion for fellow humans whose minds seem incomprehensible to me. I find it far easier to relate to and feel compassion for nature, animals, and young children whose suffering I feel vividly. I feel strongly motivated to benefit other beings and do my best to assist humanitarian work in Nepal and Tibet. But I feel I'm withdrawn and exclusive. How can I work to open my heart genuinely towards all human beings, even those I dislike or judge as barbaric in their cruelty to animals and each other? Are there practical steps I can apply in daily life to extend compassion to all humans? I think the basic understanding is that even those cruel people are human beings. They're like you and me. And whatever they're doing, wrong things, they actually want happiness and free from suffering. So therefore, because of their ignorance, their wrong views, they are doing those things which actually bring lots of pain and suffering to them eventually. So therefore, and maybe even now. So therefore, if if you look from that point of view, they're very unfortunate people. So therefore, they're doing lots of harm to themselves as well as others. So if somebody is doing something really harmful to themselves and others, how would you feel? I mean, you would not, there's no need to hate them. What is there to hate them? You have to, you generally wish that they would also be free from this wrongdoing, these negative deeds, these problems and pain they're actually creating for themselves and others. So if we think from that point of view, I think it is possible to wish well to them also. And on the other hand, if there is one person who is, less cruel or less negative, then it's good for everybody. So therefore, it's very practical to wish them to be free from this cruelty, because their cruelty and their negative state of mind has also come from something similar. They must have experienced lots of cruelty, or they must have they must have gone through very hardships, and some kind of they didn't get that much of kind of loving kindness and compassion and things like that. Therefore, they have become like that. So therefore, you would wish them to be free from that. So if I think like that, maybe can have a better understanding. Then there's another question. You talked about the culture and historical context of the examples of generating bodhicitta in this text. I like the purification understanding of the fire at the end of the world. But I have a question about the emphasis on the qualities of power and strength in bodhicitta. Elsewhere I've read and heard it being likened to the good heart and tender feelings. Compassion is a good heart. Compassion is wishing well, a kind of a benevolent feeling towards everybody. Is this a more feminine aspect of bodhicitta? The bodhicitta has no feminine and masculine sides. Bodhicitta is that good heart, genuine kind of a positive wish to everybody. That's bodhicitta. And it is that what has been described again and again everywhere. It's not that something is coming, it's there now. Then next question, there are two questions, but I think it's the same question. I wish to check my understanding about the mechanism that gives bodhicitta its incomprehensible strength. If I do a positive thing, this generates a positive fruit. If I dedicate this merit to all sentient beings, this dedication generates new merits, and so this becomes limitless. In that way, bodhicitta generates an endless multiplication of fruits for other beings and oneself. Is that the right understanding of the process? I think so. I think there's another question from here saying that, you know, like all other virtues produce their fruit and then their force is spent. Then it says that, in effect, doesn't any virtue that inspires a positive deed leave a print in our mind, samsarika or otherwise, which prepares us to do gradually more positive deeds? It's not like that. I mean, it's like that, but if I do a positive deed, you know, we always do positive deeds and negative deeds also. If I just do a positive deed, that doesn't necessarily last long. Maybe it gives a imprint or a positive effect on yourself, but not so strong. But if you make a commitment, I wish to, you know, free all beings, yeah, from the suffering of any kind, and therefore I do this, I do that, whatever I do, you know, small things, big things, then that the action becomes much more stronger, because you know it's done for a very big purpose. I think that is mainly the difference between the positive deeds done with bodhicitta and without bodhicitta, or with good intention and without so much good intention. Therefore, you know, it's how strong the positive deed is depends on the motivation, they say. That's why it is like that. The next question is, could you explain what a blessing is actually? I understand blessing more like a positive influence. And as I said before also, a blessing is not something that is only given. It's something that you receive, because the blessings of the Buddhas, blessings of the enlightened beings, blessing of great beings are always there. It's not that the Buddha would not say that, I don't want to give blessings to this person. There's nobody that Buddha doesn't want to give blessings to. Then why somebody has it and somebody doesn't have it is because whether I am ready to receive that or not. It's like a good influence, you know. If I understand the positive quality of somebody who has some good influence, and then I appreciate that, and if I kind of if I look that with that way of, you know, seeing, then I am positively influenced. I would act the same way. I will, I become more like that. And that's receiving the blessings. But if I don't, if I close myself with those positive qualities and things like that, then I never get influenced by that. So I think blessing is more of that. You cannot say that without your conscious thing, you cannot receive blessings. It's not necessarily like that. You get influence unconsciously also, by lots of things. So in the same way, the blessing is also, I think. Then there's another question. My question is about aspiring to generate bodhicitta, to help people find lasting happiness and freedom from suffering. Although I understand this to mean enlightenment, I think that the people I wish this for usually have a different idea of what happiness is. Like having a good relationship, job, house, and enough money, but not enlightenment. Is there a problem with wishing something for other people that they do not consciously wish for themselves? Indeed, they may even say they definitely don't want enlightenment if I were to ask them. I think that doesn't matter, because what I wish them is the best. And what that best is, even if we say enlightenment, we actually don't know exactly what enlightenment also is. But what I really wish is that freedom from all the sufferings completely, that I think everybody wishes. Although people cannot describe what that may mean. And then, I wish them the highest kind of happiness and the kind of lasting peace and happiness, which what exactly is, maybe people don't know. But, that's what they want, in fact, whether they know how to express it that this way or that way or not. Of course, and therefore, what you wish for is something not so, sometimes not so easy, not so, people can not understand what they really wish, there's a story like, of the, the four hands, the story that I sometimes tell. There was one person, who went into the forest, and then he didn't cut any wood, so the forest goddess became very happy with him, and then she appeared in front of him and said, "You are very good, you didn't cut any trees. So what do you wish? I give you one wish." So he thought and thought, and he couldn't think about anything, and says, "Maybe can I come back tomorrow? I can ask my friend and then come back." And then she said, "Okay, you come here at the same time." So he went back and asked his friend, "If I have to ask for a wish that I will get, what do you think I should ask for?" His friend said, "You are a weaver. So you have only two hands, and two hands cannot do much work. So if you had four hands, then it will be much better, because then you can do work for, double work." So he thought, that's a very good idea, and he went back. And then he met the goddess, and he said, "I want four hands." So she said, "Are you sure you want four hands?" He says, "Yes, I'm sure I want four hands." So she, like this, she got four. He got four hands. But then when we went home, everybody was, saw him, and he was looking so strange and so, different, that they ran away, and nobody wanted to give him any work, because, he was so strange. So therefore, many people don't know what they really want. So therefore, it doesn't matter what you wish for them is not exactly what they are consciously asking for or not. And then next question is, as we are moving gently through the text, I have time to look closely at the translations. I find the word seen in verse 13-14 inappropriate. Sin in the West is an acquired bad thing which one cannot free oneself from. Only an external agency like God can absolve it. Is this word in accord with the Buddha's teaching and the Dharma? I thought enlightenment leads one beyond the relative of such a God and an absolute like sin. Could you also explain if Buddhism has this within it? I think the sin word is not the problem. The sin concept in Christianity may be a problem. I think we should not mix up these things. The words are words. You know, words are the meaning of the words keep on changing because the meaning of the word is what we explain and attach to. You know. So therefore, you know, it's not necessarily always what, you know, the sin, the concept of sin or the concept of virtue in one, you know, way of thinking and another way of understanding can be different. So therefore, here the sin should not be understood as that, you know, as what we have described, but that's this scene. The word is used here by the translator. I don't know whether it's it has, it could have other meanings or not. But this scene has to be understood as a negative deed. I think when you write in verse, because this text is translated, they've tried to translate into kind of verse form. And you say negative deed is a long word, two words, and sin is one word, and maybe it was more easier to use sin than, you know, like negative deed and things like that. And even if you use negative deed, that could also be understood in many different ways, you know. So therefore, no word is totally free of, you know, possibilities of misunderstanding. So we have to understand this and understand in this way. Then another question is, along with the Bodhicitta Avatara, I have been reading a book written by the Venerable Khenpo Chultum Jansu Rinpoche entitled Progressive Stages of Meditation on Emptiness. It explains the different ways in which the Buddha's teachings are organized, like the three vehicles, the numerous schools, and the three turnings of the wheel of Dhamma. Could you explain where and how the teachings of Shantideva fit in with these thought systems? If or at all. Generally, if you want to, you know, if you want to put in one category of philosophy, and then Shantideva belongs to Madhyamika philosophy, and from Madhyamika also, you know, Prasangika Madhyamika philosophy, coming from Nagarjuna, and Ayadeva and Chandrakirti, and this kind of, so he is actually regarded as of the one of the most important exponent of the Madhyamika Prasangika philosophy. But this is explained in the ninth chapter. So this is it for this time. So wish you all a very happy Christmas and New Year. Thank you very much. Thank you.